We'll be talking about Hebrews chapter 12 in just a moment. And I have a series of sermons planned for that as we think about future lessons to come along. You know, the Bible teaches us very clearly about the importance of faith and the importance of faithful people and how they relate to us. Chapter 11 is called the Hall of Heroes sometimes because so many men and women are mentioned as faithful people. Now this would be in contrast with Matthew 23, where in Matthew 23 Jesus used the words scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Hypocrites, hypocrites. He was denunciating those people boldly and clearly because they were indeed hypocrites and they were not living as they supposed to have lived. But the Bible does put an emphasis upon heroes in chapter 11. And then in chapter 12 in verse 1, the writer said, "Therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us. Let us run with endurance or patience the race that is set before us." And when you begin to look at this and recognize this cloud of witnesses, it brings to mind a race. As is hinted here, the idea that Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Sarah and so many of the Old Testament characters and even in the New Testament have finished their race. And I've seen many times on television when they have these marathons, and we have a Pauline's nephew who has run in 16 marathons, often coming in right in the lead. I don't know how he does it. The marathon is like there are a number of people in this race. And when they finish, cross the finish line, they don't just keep going. They stop and say to those who are having trouble, "Come on, you can finish. Come on, you can finish." And that's the image that is left for us with regard to these heroes of the faith. They ran their race. They had many difficulties like Abraham did and like so many of those, some of them who perished because of their faith. And what the book of Hebrews is saying, they're standing at the finish line, the judgment day. And they're saying, "We have made it. We've done it. With difficulty many times, but we've done it. And now then, you keep coming. Don't get weak. Don't fall by the wayside." And that's what we're looking at tonight as we look at the idea of a fixed faith. So great a cloud of witnesses. The Lord would not have put these examples in the New Testament except that He wanted us to understand them. And they would be an example to us. So there are a number of principles, I think, that undergird the idea of their faith. And I want to look at those for the next few weeks as we consider this cloud of witnesses. When you talk about a sincere faith, these faces, first of all, you talk about somebody has conviction. In members of the church, I've often seen that, but I've often seen some that didn't have that. Religion was something of convenience, not conviction. And when the problems got stiff, they fell away. And this is not the same thing. So conviction is so important. And that's an inward drive that pushes you forward. It's something that you've chosen to do, but it's a firmly held belief. I believe in Jesus Christ. I believe in the gospel of Jesus Christ. I believe in the church of Jesus Christ. And that's changed my life. And so we have this firmly held belief. Another way of putting that is a belief you hold and will not change. Now let me make a distinction between this faith of conviction and being a stubborn-minded person, a closed-minded person. A closed-minded person is different from the one who has firmly conviction in his heart because he's open-minded. The one who has conviction, has enough conviction, he does not mind if somebody examines his faith. You're able to give a defense of your faith. Peter told us that you'd be able to tell others why you believe what you believe. And so you have a firm belief, but it's so firm you're not ashamed or afraid to let people test it. And you can hold your faith with that. And so you have this fixed faith. If we look at the examples of this, and of course, there's so much about the life of Joseph. I ran across an article not too long ago, and I've saved it. I want to look at it more closely. There were 75 reasons in Joseph's life where he was a forerunner of Christ, or an image of what Christ was going to be later and the things that he held and believed. And I'm interested in that. That's 75 reasons. That'd make a long sermon, wouldn't it? So I'm going to be looking at that as go along. But in Genesis 37 through 50, you have the story of Joseph. It starts off with him as a young lad, and he's the youngest of his brothers. And he's having visions. And he's seeing things that when he tells his father and he tells his brothers, it arouses jealousy in them because he sees the star and the moon bowing down to him. Well, that's an obvious idea that he's begun to be very important in the future. And then it shows the haystacks and all the haystacks bowing down to him. And the brothers just don't like him at all because they think he's got visions of grandeur, that he's better than they are. What they don't know is that God is going to be preparing Joseph ahead of time for the great trials that he's going to endure. And of all the people that I read about in the Old Testament, I think Joseph is the top of the list as far as his sincere faith and the way he was dedicated and convicted to do. And I've often wondered, what his mother and daddy taught him. It's not revealed, but wouldn't it be interesting to know what they taught him? We have young boys here, and they're being taught. Now, I don't know what Joseph was taught, but it was an empty vessel when they told him, and he received it sincerely, and it became a conviction. Now, that, folks, is going to either have a good result or a bad result, depending on the convictions. But they had this with regard to the existence of God and the righteousness of God, and that it called for him to be righteous. And that wasn't something he just practiced on Sunday morning. They didn't go out and live terrible through the week. This is something, of course, he didn't worship on Sunday, but you know the analogy. So here we have him really taking that into his heart. And it was something that he lived with day by day. Then to go further in the analogy, of course, we have the fact that his father sent him on an errand to find his brothers with their flock and to take them things. And when they saw him coming, they were filled with fury. And they wanted to kill him. He was thrown into a pit. And as these traders from Egypt came along, they sold their brother into slavery. And you think what a dreadful thing that was back in those days. And then, of course, in this you also see the providence of God. That God was overcoming the difficulties that Joseph was going to bear, and that eventually he would indeed see his mother and father bow down to him, as he was the first in Egypt to be below the Pharaoh. And his brothers would also kneel to him. And all these things came true because God was working with Joseph to save his people when their time of real tragedy came. And God was working. Now that, I still believe, brethren, in the providence of God. The difference in the providence of God in miracles is that a miracle is above and beyond the supernatural, above the natural. That is something that sets aside the laws of nature. And a miracle, it has been recorded many times in the Bible that Jesus did. I believe in miracles, but miracles are not continuing today. But I do believe in the providence of God, that God can arrange things through your faith and through circumstances without a miraculous intervention, that you'll come to a desired end and the end that you have conviction toward. And I see that so much in the life of Joseph, that he was willing to do all that. It's one of the most touching scenes. I can hardly read it without weeping. The most touching scene is when he goes through his ordeals and he is elevated to the person right below Pharaoh in order to save the people because the famine was coming, and he was the one that predicted the famine. Well, his family was suffering the famine, and it ended up, without telling the whole story, that the family, all of them, came down into Egypt. And when Joseph saw the family, he recognized them, but they didn't recognize him. And the Bible said that Joseph went into a private room and cried because he saw his parents. He saw his family again. And I can only imagine the shock that it must have been to his brothers when they found out, he is Joseph? And they were in a situation where he had life and death over them. But what he said was, I'm not mad at you. I'm paraphrasing, of course. I'm not mad at you. God did this to save my people. And he recognized, finally, how God was using him to do God's work. And rather than take revenge on his brothers, he hugged them and forgave them. And, you know, that's just a few of the semblances between Christ and Joseph, which intrigues me when I think about all that. And so you have this fixed faith. And he went through this with Potiphar's wife. He went through this in so many different areas. And yet he still held to the law of Moses. And he came out victorious over the end. This fixed faith is unwavering. Whether you know, whether you think other people are going to see it or not. One time I heard a definition of a classy family. And that classy family is somebody that uses cloth napkins when you don't have company. We never did that. We used paper towels. But the point of it is that he lived a certain way of life, away from his parents, away from every familiar territory, and in the midst of great difficulty, he just was Joseph. And that's such a wonderful thing to look at and to recognize that we're supposed to be like that. So through all of chapter 50, and then of course he's recognized in the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, as one of the great people of faith, and he really is. God wants us to see this, because embedded in the story of Joseph are emotions that are aroused, that touch me, and that make me see the benefit of living for God. Doesn't make a difference what people think of me. And it doesn't make any difference where I'm here or Missouri, Branson, Missouri, or in our case, Colorado. We're going to take our faith with us, and it's going to be a part of our life. And so the idea, well, I'm going to Las Vegas, and what happens in Las Vegas stays in Las Vegas. That doesn't apply to Christians with this conviction, and that's what we're talking about. Then you have Joshua's faith. In Numbers chapter 32, there's someone who was with Moses and took the people over after Moses died and did so many wonderful things. Turn to chapter 32, beginning of verse 10. Chapter 32, beginning of verse 10. And I'm in Deuteronomy, which is not the same thing. I think I'm going to have to buy me another Bible that doesn't have onion skin, because it's so hard to get to the particular passages when the pages are so thin. All right, chapter 32 and verse 10. So the Lord's anger was aroused on that day, and he swore an oath, saying, surely none of the men who came up from Egypt from 20 years old and above shall see the land of which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me, except Caleb the son of Jephunneh and the Kenizzite, and Joshua the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Lord. My, I'd love that written on my tombstone, that you fully followed the Lord. And what you have is the idea that Joshua, when the spies went into the land of Canaan to spy it out for the land, Joshua and Caleb were the ones who had the fixed faith in God. We can do this. We can do this. And here's the thing that rubs off on us then, of course, about the other things that he's done and how he led the people of Israel. And I lay these scriptures before you without reading all of them. But when look at what Joshua did on different occasions, when he was with Moses and held up Moses' hands when they were in battle, and all the things that he did, and to come into the promised land, and he follows the people and he leads the people and leads them into the promised land, because Moses was not allowed to go for that one anger that he exposed. But here's a phrase that you find in the Bible that is so wonderful that could be said about people, and I would like for it to be said about me if I'm living that way, that he followed the Lord. That's our goal, and we want to have no doubts about that. There's not any secret thoughts in my mind of doubt. They're just not there. I really believe the Bible. I believe in Jesus Christ as the Son of God. I believe in the promises of God that we're going to see Jesus, as we sang a moment ago, face to face. And when you see this, you can't give up. You look at someone's faith like Joshua. And the people were so cantankerous during that period of time. They were so rebellious and they strayed so many times. And yet Joshua kept the faith. And that's a good example for us. And Levi got backed up on that just a moment. Abednego's faith. Now, here we get into Persia, or Babylon. And I want to back up one. You're talking about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And again, I'm sure with Christians, this is a familiar story. This is when they were led off into captivity because of Judah's sins. And they went into Babylon. And Nebuchadnezzar was the king. And he destroyed the temple and took these people off. And these three, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that we learned their names were changed, went into a situation of not their making, but they had to butt heads with their masters. They had to butt heads with them because there were some things they were not going to do. So on one of the occasions, the king made an idol. It was 90 feet tall. Now, if you're a football person, you know about how long that is. But when you begin to think about it and look about it, the fact that it's 90 feet, that would be something to look up to. And the king had made an edict that when the music blows, that you bow down to this idol. And sometimes their lives depended on it, as you understand. There's some other things that are 90 feet tall that you might recognize and have seen before. There's the Jolly Green Giant. And that one is, I think, 55 and a half feet. So it's not quite so tall, but that'd be so impressive. Layered with gold and all of those kinds of things. And they were being told that they had to bow down to that, or they would be either thrown into a lion's den on one occasion or burned with fire. Now, you know, we live such a sheltered life today. Nobody's going to tell us that. Although, as I mentioned this morning, this Houston mayor said before the preachers down there were allowed to preach, they had to show their outlines to her so she could approve or disapprove. Well, I've held meetings in that area, and there's no way in the world that I would allow her to criticize or look at and preview my sermon outlines. I just wouldn't do that. Well, she doesn't really have any power, but this king did. And so here are the children of Israel thrown into the fiery pit. And I can only visualize, I've seen furnaces that were burned real hot. And they were in that. And yet, God was with them. And they had this fixed faith. Well, if I die, and they had Daniel in the lion's den, it may be that I die. But if not, I'm not going to do what you asked me to do. And that shows that he understood that life is temporary. And you know, he's been dead all these many years now, but his faith stands out. And you have this, now then, he's a faithful example to us, that you get caught in a situation where it's not the way you should be, and yet you still have an opportunity to show your faith. I think of Marvin Dotson when I think about this. Many of you don't know him, but he has been around for quite a while. He's been a member of the church. At one time, he was a pilot for the royal family in Saudi Arabia. And they're not allowed to have Bibles at all over there. You cannot proselytize. You can't teach your religion over there at all. They'll cut your head off. But he found some people from I'll say it in a moment, from the Philippines. No, India. They were from India. And they were willing to have a private Bible study. And so they had this private Bible study, and he baptized some of these men. Well, they were transferred back to their homeland again in India. And Bobby Holmes was here then. And Brother Dodson received a call from, I think his name was Isaiah? Joshua, another Joshua. And he said, come over and help us. We don't know what to do next. So Marvin and Bobby went to India and started a congregation there. And it spread to the thousands of people because of the hunger they have for the Word of God. Bobby went back any number of times after that and started many congregations and really fought the liberalism that had invaded the churches over in India, because they were all under the control of a Dallas church, which is unscriptural. You can't have one church over another church, but they were doing that. And Bobby just told them about the independence of a local church. Nobody can oversee you. And they understood that, and they became independent. And there are many congregations over there now because of this one man going to Saudi Arabia and teaching someone. It may not be Saudi Arabia, but it's one of those places over there. And I'm simply saying, here's an example in our lifetime of somebody who, had he been caught doing those Bible classes, they could have executed him. And yet he went on and did it because he knew it was the thing to do. Totally dedicated, no matter the circumstances. No matter the circumstances. And that's a good example of that. Now, going a bit further, you have the fixed faith. And as you look at some of these examples, there's some other principles that come out about this that I want to explore with you in future days. Because there's just so much good that's there. You think, well, here's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they're over in Babylon. What can that mean to me? Well, what it can mean to me here is that God put this in the Bible for me to see. God put it in the Bible for us to understand about the unwavering nature that faith has. And when I look at those men, and in chapter 12, they're one of the great cloud, or they're some of the great cloud of witnesses, and they're urging us, we made it through Babylon. And Joshua's saying, we made it out of Egypt, and we made it through the wilderness wandering, and we made it, and you can do it too. So sometimes, and this is meant to strengthen our faith, sometimes if our faith is not as strong as it ought to be, Hebrews 11 is a good chapter to go to. To really sit and meditate. I know these names are familiar. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, Joshua. They're all very familiar names, and we can say them pretty quickly and move on, but stop. And look at what the Bible tells us about them and how they were willing to do what they did because they had a fixed faith. And I pray that we will have that kind of faith right here as we serve the Lord. This is the lesson tonight, and we... In just a moment, we'll offer the